Graphic Audio presents Mark Dalton, Owner-Operator by Ido Van Belkom. Copyright 2007, Ido Van Belkom. Performed by David Coyne and the Graphic Audio Players. Episode 2, Highway Robbery.
Highway 17 was as clear as the sky that filled his windshield, and it looked like it was going to be another beautiful day. Mark Dalton checked his mirrors for oncoming traffic one last time, then shifted his Peterbilt into first. He signaled left and began the run through the gears, taking his time to bring the rig up to speed. Although he'd let the engine warm up for a good half hour while he'd done his circle check, it didn't make sense to push it if he didn't have to. His Peterbilt 379, which he affectionately called Motherload, was already 6 years old, and if he treated her right, she just might be with him for another six, maybe even longer. Mark smiled at the thought. He hadn't always been so careful with his women, but he learned from his mistakes. Just 2 years ago, he'd been working as a private investigator, making a good living, videotaping men who spent three-hour lunches with their secretaries and women who spent more time with their personal trainers than they did in the gym. The money had been okay, but the work had taken up a lot of his time, especially nights and weekends. That had become painfully obvious when he set up his camera one night outside a motel room on the lakeshore and discovered he was taping his own wife in bed with another woman. That little episode had taken a lot of the fun out of being a private detective, and suddenly Mark needed to find something else to do with his life, at least for a little while. He'd been driving off and on for years whenever he wasn't working on a case, so as soon as the divorce was finalized, he sold off all his assets and bought a 92 Peterbilt with a fully equipped sleeper. Driving a rig was just what he'd needed. He could work as much or as little as he wanted, and when and where he wanted. And perhaps most important of all, he had only himself to worry about. And even that seemed like one too many at times. But old habits died hard, and he wasn't averse to getting involved in other people's lives, maybe even sticking his nose into a few places where it didn't belong. Like that woman walking along the side of the highway up ahead. What's her story, Mark wondered. What's she doing out here in the middle of nowhere?
Well, there's only one way to find out.
He slowed the rig as he came up behind her, and she turned to face him with her arm extended and her thumb pointed in the direction he was headed. He slowed the Peterbilt further, pulled off the highway, and came to a stop on the gravel shoulder. He waited there for her, watching her grow larger in his mirror. Before she reached the truck, he turned on the CB and switched it to Channel 9, on the off chance there might be some news about the girl being a runaway or an otherwise missing person. Pretty was the first thought that came to Mark when the young woman's face appeared through the passenger side window.
Hi.
Where are you headed?
West.
Just west?
Yeah.
Now that sounded odd to Mark. Usually someone all alone out in the middle of nowhere was headed somewhere. They might have been dropped off by someone headed someplace else, or been walking between rides, but they always knew where they were going. He looked at her for a few seconds.
All right, hop in.
Thanks.
She didn't flash him too much of a smile, and that wasn't right either. Someone walking alone for a while is usually thrilled to get a ride. She struggled to get into the cab, and while she tried to make herself comfortable, Mark noticed that her shoulder-length ash-blonde hair needed combing. She had a white t-shirt on that had some sort of tropical fish on the front of it. The shirt was spotted with something dark and, like her black denim pants, was in need of a wash. The black and white running shoes on her feet had mud on them, and she wasn't carrying anything with her besides the gray summer jacket she had draped over her arm. Mark waited until she settled into the seat before heading back out onto the highway. When they were on the road and up to speed, he waited for her to start up a conversation, but she didn't seem to be too interested in talking. What she did seem to be interested in was the highway in front of them, which she scanned like some eagle on a perch.
So, how is it that you came to be on the highway this morning?
My car broke down.
Huh. I don't remember seeing any cars on the side of the road for at least 20 miles in either direction.
I got a ride from somebody.
Now, that was possible, but if she got out of someone's vehicle, then she must know where she's headed, or at least where she's not headed. And even if she did get a ride, that wouldn't explain why she looked so beat up. There were cuts and scrapes on her face and arms, and her dirty white t-shirt had a big tear on the left shoulder. And despite her seemingly tough exterior, Mark couldn't help but notice that there was a look of fear in her eyes.
Look, Miss...
Jane.
Don't tell me. Your last name's Smith.
How'd you guess?
Okay, Miss Smith. A lot of what you're telling me just doesn't add up. Now, either you tell me something I can believe, or I'm just going to let you off at the next crossroad.
Attention all drivers. Attention all drivers. Just want you to know that the OPP are looking for a woman who skipped out on a motel bill outside of Huntsville. Seems she also left some guy behind in pretty bad shape.
Mark glanced over at her, and she raised her eyebrows in an awkward look of surprise.
Does that mean he's dead? Can you ask him?
Mark wasn't sure what her interest in this guy was, but he obliged her.
Is the guy in the motel room going to make it?
Affirmative. He's been worked over pretty good, but they figure he'll pull through all right. The girl the cops are looking for is white, mid-20s with shoulder-length dirty blonde hair. She's wearing black and white shoes, black pants, and a white t-shirt from Marineland that's got killer whales on the front of it.
Mark leaned forward and took a closer look at the front of her t-shirt. Damned if what he thought were tropical fish weren't killer whales.
You mind explaining...
Shut up!
Her right arm suddenly appeared from under her jacket. There was a gun in her hand.
Just keep driving.
Mark kept his eyes on the road, but managed to steal a couple of glances at the woman, Jane Smith, who was sitting in the passenger seat next to him and pointing a gun at his head. The gun looked a little on the small side, nothing more than a .22, if that. Her hand was shaking, and the fear he'd noticed before in her eyes had spread to the rest of her face. If he wasn't behind the wheel of his rig, Mark might have risked taking the gun from her. She didn't look like she'd be much of a shot, for one thing. And for another, Mark had a gut feeling she didn't have it in her to pull the trigger. But even if he was crazy enough to try taking the gun from her while they were out on the highway, not only did he risk getting shot, and at this range, who could miss, but he could wind up putting his rig on its side, and that kind of trouble he needed even less than a hole in the head.
I seen her. Skinny thing. Kinda pretty. Didn't know where she was going, but seemed to be in an awful hurry to get there.
So this girl's been around, thought Mark, sneaking another glance to his right to see if the second trucker's words had any effect on her. She didn't flinch, and the gun remained pointed at his head.
I gave her a ride from Huntsville to North Bay, but she jumped ship when I stopped for fuel. Stole my starter's pistol out of the glove compartment, too.
Mark lifted his foot off the accelerator and turned his head to take a better look at the gun. Sure enough, it wasn't a gun at all, but a reasonable facsimile looking just real enough to get people's feet and hearts racing. With slow, even movements to ensure the gun wouldn't go off and set his ears to ringing, Mark reached over and took it away from her. For a moment, her empty hand trembled wildly in the air. Then it moved to her head as she cradled her skull with both hands. He picked up speed again and drove along for a few kilometers in silence to give her time to settle down and collect her thoughts. There was obviously more to this whole thing than just some guy being rolled in a motel room, and Mark was curious enough to know what it was. By the time they reached Cache Bay, her sobs had turned to silent tears. Mark figured she was about ready to talk.
Now look, I can imagine you've had a pretty rough morning. But if you don't start telling me the truth about what's going on here, the next stop will be the OPB detachment in Sturgeon Falls. You want that?
She shook her head.
Good. Now, what's your name?
I told you.
Your real name.
Jennifer Mitchell.
Mark waited for her to say something more, but it was becoming obvious that extracting information from her would be like pulling molars.
And how did you come to be walking along the highway?
I was riding with my boyfriend on a run into Winnipeg. He asked me to come along to keep him company and to see a bit of the country.
Yeah?
But he didn't seem to be enjoying my company much.
Why not?
He was constantly watching the mirrors.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Even when we were parked?
Oh.
You see, Rick did an 8-week course with a school to get his A license, and he did really well at it. We figured, with the way companies are in need of drivers these days, he'd be able to get a job right away, but that's not the way it worked out. the best companies want drivers with experience, and you can't get experience unless somebody is willing to take a chance on you.
Mark gave an understanding nod. He'd heard similar complaints plenty of times before.
So, one day he met up with a high school buddy of his in a donut shop in downtown Toronto. Rick told the guy he was having problems getting work, and the guy said he'd see what he could do for him. A couple of days later, he calls Rick and offers him this honey of a deal.
Mark had a feeling he wasn't going to like this honey of a deal one bit.
This guy and his partners would loan Rick the money to buy his own used rig. On top of that, they promised to give him as much work as he wanted. 2 or 3 times a week to Rochester, as many times as he could handle.
Sounded great. But Mark knew that anything that sounded too good to be true usually was.
Rick was so happy to have the work that he never bothered to really find out what he was carrying. The boxes and paperwork said there were cameras inside, and since Kodak is based in Rochester, well...
Well, what?
When he realized there was booze and cigarettes inside the boxes, he didn't want any part of it. He told the guys who lent him the money that he knew what he was carrying for them and that he didn't want to work for them anymore. He promised to pay them back any way he could, and they seemed to be satisfied with that.
But...
But Rick didn't have any contacts, so even though he had his own rig and a bit of experience, it was tough finding enough work to pay them back on schedule. He ended up missing a few payments, and they came looking for him.
So these guys were following your boyfriend?
Yeah. They got him to do one last run. Then they were behind us all the way from Toronto. After I went to get us some breakfast this morning, I came back to find 2 guys working over Rick. One had a tire iron, the other one a knife.
And you stopped them?
Yeah, well, not really. When they saw me in the doorway, they stopped beating on Rick and came after me. I threw hot coffee into the face of one of them and managed to get away.
What about the blood on your clothes?
There was a lot of it in the room.
But if you managed to get away, why didn't you go back for Rick? Or at least call the police.
Rick was dead. Or at least I thought he was. And I knew the cops would be looking at me like a suspect, thinking I'd made up the story about the 2 guys. And then what about them? They were looking for me too, because they knew I was a witness and would be able to identify them.
Mark thought it might be true about them coming after her, but he didn't buy her fear of the police. Despite the few run-ins he'd had with hard-headed cops as a private detective, Mark knew they weren't all stupid. They would have been able to check out her story and would have started looking for the 2 men by now. She obviously needed help, so why wasn't she asking for it?
Is there something you're not telling me?
I wanted to get to the truck before they did.
The truck?
It was Rick's and my future.
The truck?
Yes. It was locked, but I wasn't going back to the motel room to look for the key. So I waited until they took the truck. Then I caught a ride with another trucker, hoping to catch up to them.
Her words were cut off as she suddenly became interested in the rearview mirror outside her window.
You really think you'll find them?
Yes, I do. In fact, it looks like they found me.
Mark took a look in his own mirror. There was a big blue Freightliner cab over in the left-hand lane with the name Jennifer painted in fancy lettering between the bottom of the windshield and the top of the radiator grille. There was smoke pouring out of the rig's twin pipes, and the driver looked to be in an awful hurry.
That's Rick's truck coming up behind us.
Fear began to creep up Mark's spine. If the truck coming up fast behind them was indeed Rick's, that meant the man behind the wheel was a cold-blooded killer. Even though Rick hadn't died, the 2 men had entered the motel room with the intention of killing him, which meant they were guilty of attempted murder at the very least. And if they were willing to kill a man to settle an outstanding debt, what else might they be willing to do to get rid of the only other witness to their crime besides the victim? Mark pressed down hard on the accelerator, and the rate that the Freightliner was approaching slightly slowed. Mark sighed, realizing he'd never be able to outrun them, even if he wanted to. He was loaded front to back with china and dinnerware for a restaurant supply company in Saskatoon. His rig and the 53-foot trailer it was pulling was already at its 80,000-pound limit, and there was no way he could stay at this speed for long. The other truck would overtake him in minutes. And if they knew that the girl, Jennifer, was in his truck, they might try to run him off the road. Once they'd done that, they could kill them both and make it look like part of an accident. But he reasoned. If they were going to try and run him off the road, they'd be in for a surprise. Because if Mark had anything on them, it was weight. A truck full of cigarettes and booze was no match for the tonnage amassed by skidfuls of china plates. He eased off the accelerator. No sense in burning out the motor just to postpone the inevitable. And the Freightliner started to catch up.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. What do you think they're going to do? Do they even know you're riding with me?
Although unlikely, it was possible they'd seen her get into his cab, or they might have heard something over the radio. Then again, it was also conceivable that they were just in a hurry to get to Winnipeg, deliver the load, and sell off the truck. Mark checked his mirror and saw that the Freightliner was now even with the rear of his trailer.
Hurry, quick, get in the back.
What?
Get in the sleeper, I don't want them to see you.
She got off the seat, climbed into the sleeper, and pulled the curtain shut. Mark looked over his shoulder and saw that she was peeking out of a slit between the curtains. The Freightliner was just about even with him. Mark looked over at the driver. It was a young guy, unruly dark hair, dark glasses. His face looked a little red, and his white short-sleeved shirt had a huge stain around the collar and down the front. He was either an utter slob, or he'd recently had coffee thrown in his face. Mark was apt to believe the latter. Mark's fingers tightly clenched the wheel as he waited for something to happen. His knuckles had begun to turn white, and his palms were aching, but he wasn't about to loosen his grip. At last, something happened. The driver of the Freightliner smiled at him and gave him a little wave, just a friendly how you doing. Mark took a deep breath, eased off the accelerator again, and watched as the Freightliner moved ahead, and then pulled over into the lane in front of them.
All right, you can come out now.
No, the other one's behind him.
Mark checked his mirror and saw a burgundy Buick LeSabre come up on the left, then tuck in behind the other truck.
That's their car!
So they would be getting rid of the truck in Winnipeg. Probably even had somebody lined up to strip it down and ship the parts halfway around the world. Mark watched the truck slowly pull away and decided not to chase after it.
Can't you keep up with them?
I'm not blowing my motor just to keep up with somebody I'll be catching up to later.
What do you mean?
Well, they're gonna have to stop sometime.
But what if they turn off before Winnipeg?
Mark thought about that a moment, and then turned to look at her. Why is she so worried about the truck? If anything, she should be wanting to head back to Huntsville to be with her boyfriend, Rick. God knows he could probably use the company right now.
And just what is it with that truck, anyway?
What do you mean?
I mean, while your boyfriend is in some hospital wondering if his brain is ever going to work right again, you're riding cross-country after some truck. What's so damn special about that truck?
She climbed back into the passenger seat and leaned her shoulder up against the door before speaking.
We're engaged. We were going to get married as soon as Rick paid off this guy's loan.
But you said he was late making the payments.
Then we would only have to pay the money back to his parents.
What? You borrowed money from them too?
When his father found out the kind of trouble he was in, he offered to loan Rick the money to get him out of a jam. He mortgaged the house and gave Rick the money in cash.
Cash?
That's the way they wanted it.
Oh boy.
We were going to make the payment when we got back from Winnipeg, but they caught up to us in Huntsville and...
Why didn't you just give them guys the money and be done with it?
I'm sure Rick tried to, but I think he mentioned going to the cops a couple of times too many.
Oh, gee, you think that might have been a mistake?
How naive could this guy Rick have been? Or maybe he was just crazy. Or stupid. Or both.
So, instead of just taking their money, they decide to take the truck, the money inside it, and kill Rick, just in case he thinks about going to the police again. Oh, that's nice. Real nice.
Up ahead, the Freightliner rounded a curve and was gone. A moment later, the Buick following it also disappeared from view. That started her crying again. Mark felt bad for her. She seemed like a nice girl. And all her and Rick had wanted was a chance to get started on their lives together. And here were a couple of bad boys all ready to take advantage of two kids' dreams. Rick was probably clinging to life by a string in some hospital, and they were about to lose not only what they'd invested in the truck, but all the money the kids' family put up to help him out as well. At this rate, they'd be paying back their debts until the day they died, and even that might not clear it. And for what? So a few people could cheat the government and save a few bucks on their booze and smokes? Mark wanted to comfort her, wanted to say the right thing, but he was never good with words, so it was best not to try. On the other hand, it might be possible for him to help her, to actually do something for her. That was his strong suit, taking action. But what could he do for her out here on the highway? Just then, they came upon a long straight. Ahead in the distance, over on the right, was a truck stop. As Mark neared, he looked for the big blue Freightliner cab over in the lot. Sure enough, it was parked in one of the service lanes, taking on fuel. He looked at his own fuel gauge and saw that it was still 3/4 full.
I think maybe I could use some fuel.
He pulled off the highway and into a whole lot of trouble. Mark slowed his rig to a crawl as he neared the service area of the truck stop, giving himself extra time to think.
What are you going to do?
I don't know yet.
He had an idea or two, but no real plan. The blue Freightliner was parked in one of the fuel service bays, getting topped off with fuel. The Le Sabre was parked behind it, probably needing a fill-up as well. Mark looked over to the restaurant and peered through the windows to try and see what things were like inside. It was busy, which made sense considering the number of cars and trucks out in the lot. Slowly, a plan began to formulate in Mark's mind. It was the sort of plan that might get him killed, but it was the only one he had at the moment, and he might as well go with it. He turned into the lane to the left of the Freightliner, pulled his tractor ahead of it, then turned right, blocking the other tractor's exit route. Mark got out of his truck.
Hey, what you think you're doing?
I know this guy.
He climbed up on the side of the truck, pulled on the door handle, and looked in through the window.
I hauled a load for him last month, and I'm still waiting on the check.
The attendant nodded and busied himself with filling the Freightliner's tanks. Obviously, he didn't want to get involved in a dispute between two truckers, especially one over money.
Hey, where'd he go? Did you notice?
He's getting a coffee, I guess.
All right, thanks.
Together, Mark and Jennifer headed for the restaurant.
You know what you're going to do now?
I'm still not sure. I guess it depends on what we find when we get there.
Before going in the restaurant, he looked in through the windows.
Do you think these guys are good with their fists?
They didn't seem to have any trouble holding Rick down, and he's 6'1", 190. Even did some wrestling in high school.
If he was smart, he'd just call the police and wait for them to sort things out. But if he did that, one of the two would get away in the Buick, maybe even both of them. Besides that, he wasn't the kind to sit around and wait. He had to do something.
Do you think you'd recognize them if you see them?
I already see them. They're at the back of the line on the right.
Mark looked in the direction she nodded and recognized the driver with the coffee-stained white shirt. The guy standing next to him had to be the driver of the Buick.
So let's go.
Hey, hold on a second. Let me just think a minute here.
It was obvious he wasn't going to be able to hold these guys by himself. He needed help, and all he had was a restaurant full of truckers. But that might not be such a bad thing.
Maybe I could use that to my advantage.
The whole situation reminded him of the climax to the movie The Fugitive, where Harrison Ford finally catches up with the bad guy in a hotel ballroom full of people. Instead of confronting the guy in the ballroom, Ford's Dr. Richard Kimball tells the guy he'll be waiting for him in an adjoining room. That's just wrong. The only way to confront someone in a room full of people is to do everything in plain view of hundreds of eyewitnesses.
Here.
He gave Jennifer a quarter.
Call the police. Tell them that...
What?
Now, the truth would be too confusing to explain in such a short time.
Tell them there's a lunatic in this restaurant and you think he may have a gun.
Jennifer took the quarter and made the call. Mark took a moment to gather up his courage, then grit his teeth together and head into the restaurant.
You! You're the one!
The guy with the coffee-stained shirt put a finger to his chest and started looking around for the police.
Oh, me? You drive a blue Freightliner cab over with twin pipes, dark blue detailing, and the name Jennifer painted on the front?
Maybe. Who wants to know?
Well, the cops, for one. You're the guy who put a friend of mine in a hospital by driving him off the road and into a ditch near Armprior.
Where?
Don't play stupid with me. You heard what I said. He accidentally cut you off trying to avoid a car that pulled in front of him. You blasted him with your horn and he made the mistake of giving you the finger. So you ran him off the road and into the ditch. A guy with a wife and 3 kids now has a busted jaw, broken neck, and 2 cracked vertebrae. Eats his dinner through a straw, all because you wanted to get even.
The truckers at the nearby tables had all stopped eating. They were listening intently to Mark's story, even grumbling and heckling every once in a while.
Look, buddy, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, and I don't want to know.
Don't give me that crap after your reckless driving put my friend in the hospital.
You know, it's guys like you who give the rest of us hard-working truckers who drive by the rules a bad name.
Yeah, I'm gonna let these guys play.
His plan might actually work. While he couldn't be 100% sure, at least now Mark felt like the other truckers were with him.
Yeah, whatever. Come on, let's get out of here.
Mark didn't want it to get physical if he could help it. But if he didn't do something soon, the two of them would be walking right out of the restaurant.
Where do you think you're going?
Mark pushed Coffee Stain hard in the chest with both hands. The guy looked like he wanted to fight, but was so far resisting the temptation. Obviously, he didn't want to risk losing the truck, the money, and his load in some truck stop brawl over something he didn't know anything about.
Look, pal, I'm getting in my truck and getting the hell out of here. If you're smart, you'll step aside and let me go.
Not until you say you're sorry for what you did to my friend.
It sounded silly, Mark knew, but it was all he could think of at the moment.
Screw you!
Mark was all ready to push the guy again, but a strange thing happened. A group of truckers had moved in behind him, blocking the two guys' only way out of the restaurant. Apparently, drivers around here didn't take too kindly to fits of road rage, especially when they put one of their own in the hospital. Coffee Stain and his friend started to push their way through the crowd. The crowd pushed back. Without warning, Coffee Stain pulled a knife. Everyone started backing away. Everyone except Mark. He remained standing where he was and took a good look at the knife. In addition to being very big and very sharp, it was also spattered with blood. Rick's blood, no doubt.
Get out of the way. I don't want to have to cut you.
I don't want you to have to cut me either.
Good, then get out of my way.
No.
Coffee Stain took a step forward, and Mark took the starter's pistol from his pocket and pointed it directly at the guy's forehead. The crowd withdrew even further. Some were now scrambling out the door.
Hey, take it easy, man. You put my friend in the hospital, and now you want to cut me too?
Look, I just wanted to get out of here.
Drop the knife. On your knees. Both of you.
Mark took a look out the window. Still no sign of the police. He turned to the two men, now on their knees.
You know, guys like you really piss me off. For every 200 safe drivers on the road, there's one jerk like you who screws it all up for everybody.
Okay. I'm sorry, all right? Just don't shoot me.
Oh, I see. You want me to show you some mercy. Like the mercy you showed Rick in that motel room in Huntsville?
Coffee Stain's eyes grew wide and his face turned white. Jennifer stepped out of the crowd and stood at Mark's left.
That's right. I know what you did, and I'm here to even the score.
He had no answer to that, other than raising his hands in surrender. Mark ignored the gesture.
Ready, set, go.
Slowly, another darker stain began to appear in the middle of Coffee Stain's pants. At that moment, two police cruisers, lights flashing, pulled up outside the restaurant. Mark knew he would have some explaining to do, but not nearly as much as Coffee Stain and his friend.
Be sure to look for the next episode of Mark Dalton, Owner Operator. In May, Episode 3 appears in Deathlands No. 23, Outlanders No. 40, and Doomsday Warrior No. 1.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.